You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Butt from filling in for Phil Williams today. We are about to be joined by Sean Ross. He is a political activist in the state of Alabama. He is he actually runs a lot of campaigns. Just ran the Katie Britt campaign. Is still running it. Sean, are you there?
Yes, sir. How are you, Scott?
I'm good. I didn't know if I wanted to throw you out there in the middle of the Katie Britt campaign with a week away. I know that that is all you are focused on at the moment. But yeah. Your world may change a little bit. A week from tomorrow, after that election is over. And I don't know if you're going to continue on with the Katie Britt administration. We expect her to win. We've seen the polling, and we don't think it's going to be a surprise.
Well, you know, we kind of like Wesley was talking about, our focus is kind of what's in front of us right now. We've got to get through November 8th. It's still really important. Scott, we were up in Madison County today in the Huntsville area. And for example, we've got some really super competitive state legislative races up there, both on the Senate side and the House side. So it's really critical that Republicans across the state get out the vote. We can't take anything for granted, certainly. And, you know, whether it's the top of the ticket or some of these local races, they all matter because we can talk all day long about how Joe Biden's agenda is crushing the American people. And that's true. But let's not forget that Joe Biden's agenda is the Democratic Party's agenda. It's not like he's out there standing by himself. He is where his party is, unfortunately, including with the Democratic Party in this state. So it's really, really, really important for the future of our state and our country that we make sure we generate a great turnout and make that red wave happen. Because it doesn't happen passively. We have to make it happen.
That's a valid point. As you know, I am the publisher of the Trustful Tribune, and as a newspaper, we try to present all sides. I am a pretty outspoken conservative. We know that, but as we're presenting the candidates and information to our readership, but that doesn't really matter where I stand, because our job is to bring the news, bring the candidates, and share their views with our audience, and then let our audience decide. As part of that process, I have interviewed just about all of the top Democrat candidates running for office in the state of Alabama. And you're right. This Biden agenda that we're seeing nationally is translating back to the Alabama Democratic Party. While those candidates were very careful not to overly embrace Joe Biden, they were sharing a lot of the same beliefs and a lot of the same positions that we have seen on the national stage. So these elections are important that are coming up, not just the big ones at the top of the ticket. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about from your Politico perspective. You keep an eye on races across the state. Where do you see the competitive races in Alabama in some of these smaller races? Where do you see those right now, and how do you think they'll fall?
Yeah, so the first ones I just kind of alluded to, we've got two House races up in the Huntsville-Madison area. Those are to fill the seats of two gentlemen who are retiring, Mac McCutcheon and Mike Ball, both Republicans retiring. Mac's the Speaker of the House, of course.
Right.
And you've got two super competitive races there. Philip Rigsby and David Cole are the Republican candidates. And then you have two Democratic candidates who are running hard, including Mallory Hagan, the former Miss America. She obviously ran for Congress in a different area of the state last cycle. So she's making it a really tough race. You also have Tom Butler, an incumbent state senator, longtime state senator, who has a tough challenge on his hand in that area. That area, is trending in a way that is competitive. And we were talking to many local Republicans up there today who are very keen to keep this certainly a red area and not have it go purple. So they're working hard. Kind of to skip down, I'll kind of go to Montgomery first. We also have a competitive state house there. Charlotte Meadows is the incumbent. She has a tough Democratic challenge that has been kind of really flamed by how redistricting went. And, it's not that the lines were drawn in a way that was just unfair to her. It's just a simple fact of how Montgomery demographically is going that that district has changed in 10 years. We'll see how that goes. A lot of people had written her off, but I think she's still very much in that race. She could pull this out. Then down in Mobile, Scott, one I'm looking at, it's a state Senate race there. Vivian Figures, longtime incumbent Democratic senator, whose late husband served in that same seat before her. She's got a real challenge on her hands from really a firebrand conservative down there, somebody who's been involved in the local Tea Party and, you know, who some on the left are trying to paint as far right. But he's given her a run, and he's doing that by going to, you know, predominantly or traditionally, I should say, Democratic areas, places like Pritchard, which, you know, don't have a huge median income, for example. There's a higher unemployment in Pritchard. They've just had some problems with poverty and a lack of opportunity. This is where the Republicans campaigning to try and win that district, and it's working. Because not only is he driving a high turnout in Baldwin County, which is a very red area, but he's trying to win over, you know, some kind of generationally Democratic voters. So that one's kind of fascinating to me.
So Figures, and we talked about Charlotte Meadows, that really is kind of a result of redrawing district lines that is affecting her race. But you don't feel like that's the case with Figures, that it's, have the lines been redrawn there, or do you feel like he's
they have. That's a great point, because Baldwin County's, like, you know, that kind of Spanish Fort area of Baldwin County is newly drawn into that district. So that absolutely is kind of what puts it in an area where it should still be a blue seat. Don't get me wrong how it's drawn, but now it's actually within the realm of possibility when you have somebody, the incumbent, who I don't think is very popular. You just have the Biden climate, and all of a sudden, a D plus, I'm making this number up, but let's say a D plus 12 seat becomes competitive.
Right.
So that's what you're seeing down there. You're just kind of a confluence of circumstances.
That's fascinating. And that's kind of been a pet peeve of mine for a while, that I really believe the Alabama Republicans need to actively start reaching out into the black communities throughout the state of Alabama, because I feel like the Alabama Democratic Party has just made themselves such a non-factor in this state that the Republicans could make inroads if they will go after it and will campaign. You know, we've seen national election after national election where a challenger will say to an incumbent president, or say to the people, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I kind of feel like Alabama Republicans should be asking that question every single election in Democratic areas at this point.
No, that's a great point, absolutely. And, you know, just values, too. I mean, the values that the modern National Democratic Party holds,
they're not
the values of many black Alabamians in this state. They're just not. I mean, you know, faith, family, and freedom, talking about that, I mean, that's, you know, what Katie's been running on. Those are the same things that, you know, black Alabamians in general hold very dearly, you know. Church is big in these communities, for example,
right.
And, you know, so is family. So I think the Democratic Party, I mean, just look at the craziness that you're seeing at the national level. I mean, they don't care about, you know, seven genders and just all this. All this nonsense, Scott, I mean, that's not helping somebody's daily life. You know, they want opportunity and for their children to thrive and for their community to be safe and strong, just like anyone else.
No, you're exactly right. So many black Alabamians are such strong people of faith. If you doubt that, go into black communities on a Sunday and see where all the cars are parked. There is just not a lot of difference in people of faith, regardless of their skin color. And as you see some of the issues national Democrats are making, that can't sit well with anybody of faith, regardless of their race or color. I do think that they're finding themselves without a political home at the moment.
No, absolutely. I think that's right. And I think it takes candidates working hard and being intentional and getting out and really just sharing the message and listening, too. I mean, that's so big. Just starting a conversation can lead to really good things.
We have watched, Sean, over the last, especially over the last 30 days, we've been watching the polling for a year now, but we've been watching the polling, especially over the last 30 days, and seeing how it's trending going into Election Day a week from tomorrow. I'm curious as to your opinion on the national landscape and what we'll see. For a while, it looked like a big red wave was going to happen. There was nothing that was going to stop it. And then about 30 days ago, we start hearing from the national media that, no, Democrats are making inroads, they're surging in the polls, things are getting better. And then for the last week, you can hear the more liberal pundits in the national media preparing for the worst a week from tomorrow. So if you can set aside the Katie Britt race, which you are very, very much involved with, you've run this campaign, let's set that campaign aside for one moment and give me your best guess at what we're going to see on a national scale in the midterms next week.
Yeah, no, we're trending for a really fantastic night for Republicans across the country. Democrats have been playing this game where, first of all, they were trying to control the narrative in these races, in these swing states especially.
Yep.
They were trying to make it about issues that the voters really weren't focused on, but they were trying to essentially project those issues into the election. It didn't work. Now you've seen recently they tried the game where they say, well, no, don't Democrats are going to win. So, Democrats are going to win. And, they're trying to suppress Republican enthusiasm, Republican turnout. It hasn't worked. And all the underlying data we've seen this entire time showed the election was about the economy, crime, border security, and education. This was always going to be a change election because Biden is historically unpopular and historically unsuccessful. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. All these ballot numbers, the top line polls you're seeing in these swing states, they're trending Republican in such a huge way. I mean, now even Washington, we're seeing polls in Washington where we could very well win that Senate race, for example. I mean, I think we're headed towards a really great night. You could see 52 to probably 54 Republican senators after this, and we're absolutely going to take back the House, no doubt about it.
Sean, you are one who digs through the polling and starts to look at the things that others may not be paying that much attention to. I'm interested to see or to ask you as you go through this, where are the independents falling?
They're falling Republican in a huge way. I mean, some of these states you're seeing independents break, 30 points towards Republicans, and that's just
wow.
I mean, that's just an insurmountable situation. I mean, look, they know what Joe Biden's done, and it's a record of complete failure on every front. And it's not like the Biden administration is forecasting that they're trying to reverse course. They're going to double down if they get, a Democratic Senate and a House again. So, independents are voting on kitchen table issues, and really they're voting on the direction of the country, too, because the direction of the country is not good. Again, this is a huge change election. People are really yearning for change, and I think that's what we're going to get.
Sean, thank you for taking the time to join us. This has been Sean Ross. I'm Scott Buttram with Right Side Radio. We're going to be right back after this break. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. This is Scott Buttram filling in for Phil Williams. Let me recap our day a little bit. For starters, Phil Williams is out. He has an important family engagement that he is taking care of. And I was supposed to be filling in for him, but I went to the wrong city. I went to Athens, Alabama, instead of Gadsden, Alabama. So Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Radio Show, also the executive editor of 1819 News, also, and this is the most important factor, very good friend decided to step in and cover for me while I drove from Athens, Alabama, back across to Gadsden. And I'm from Trustful, y'all. So anybody that has an Alabama map or knows your way around the state understands what I just said. I left Trustful to drive to Athens, drove back to Gadsden, and I'll be leaving here to go right up to Mentone, about 20 minutes, 30 minutes up the road. So I could have stayed right here at home, but I didn't know what I was doing. So Jeff Forrest stepped in the first hour. We are grateful that Jeff did that. He interviewed Tom Butler, who's in a very competitive race up in the Huntsville area. Had a great interview with Tom. And of course, Jeff brought his insight to the show, probably one of the sharpest political minds in the state of Alabama. I don't know how he does it, but Jeff keeps his finger on everything going on politically in the state. We also had on Paul DeMarco. Paul is the former state representative or senator. I can't recall. I think representative. But anyway, Paul is the current chair of the Jefferson County Republican Party. Had a great conversation with Paul regarding the Democrat platform, which seems to be weighed heavily on getting criminals the right to vote in the state of Alabama. If you follow the National Democratic platform, you know that that is part of the National Party platform. It is a big deal in Alabama among Alabama Democrats. And if you're kind of baffled as to why they're losing races all over the state of Alabama, that probably gives you a pretty good idea. Because turning the bad guys loose is not something that appeals to many voters at all, and obviously not appealing to Democrat voters because they've walked away from that party in this state in droves, and they're not going back. We followed that up with a really good interview with Wesley Britt, Katie Britt's husband. We got a chance to talk to Wesley about what it is, what it's like to be behind the scenes, as his wife has gone from a virtual unknown in the state of Alabama to upset one of the biggest firebrand conservatives in Mo Brooks that has ever come out of this state, defeated him handily in the Republican race that primaries that took place a couple of months ago. She will face the Democratic challenger on Tuesday night, a week from tomorrow, in the midterm election. So we got a chance to visit with Wesley Britt and what life has been like behind the scenes as his wife campaigns for one of the most important offices in the United States of America, and how they have had to team up because they have two school-age children at home, beautiful daughter, great-looking son, great kids, and how they have managed to team up to continue to be mom and dad first and foremost as this race continues on. It's only going to get more difficult for the Britt family. If Katie becomes Senator Katie Britt and ends up in Washington, D.C., there are going to be challenges involved. But once you're around these two people and spend time with them and understand how grounded they are and how set they are in their priorities, then you begin to realize that they're going to be just fine with this. So we enjoyed that visit. Then we had Sean Ross, one of the brightest political minds in the state of Alabama, has run multiple campaigns, been involved with multiple campaigns in the state of Alabama. He gave us a peek into the midterms and gave us a view of what he thinks is going to happen a week from tomorrow night across the country. He also had a chance to look a little bit at the some of the state offices that are going to be a little more competitive. We're going to head right back into a little break here. When we get back, we will have another guest on. Going to go a little different direction. We'll have Zach McCray, a Democrat politico, highly respected. I think the world of Zach. I've got a great deal of respect for his insight. So we'll get a chance to talk to Zach and see what he thinks when we come back from this break. And again, this is Scott Buttram filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. Stumbled all over that, y'all. 92.5 FM out of Huntsville, Cumulus, 77 AM there. And in the Birmingham market, 101.1 FM, WYDE, 850 AM. We'll be back. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. This is Scott Buttram. I am the publisher of the Trustful Tribune. I'm sitting in today for Phil Williams. He's dealing with some family events, good family events, and joyous family events, and we're glad that he's able to do that. We've had an interesting show today, a lot of fun. I have enjoyed spending some time with you guys, the audience here at Right Side Radio. Joining us now is going to be a little bit of a twist for all conservative talk radio. We're bringing in a Democrat politico. Zach McCray joins us now. Zach is one of my favorite people, and you're probably asking yourself, how does a conservative newspaper publisher end up having a friendship with a Democrat political operative of all people? Well, because he's an honest guy and because he's very insightful, and I've found his opinion to be of great value. So I tend to hang around people like that. Zach, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Scott, this is great. Thanks for that. Thanks for your friendship. And it's the highlight of my day to talk to you and your audience.
Well, good. That makes me feel great because I always enjoy talking to you. I follow you on social media. And you know, I find that really people who work on the inside of political campaigns, when they step away from the campaign that they're involved in, they truly do have great insight to what they're seeing and what's going to happen. And that's how I came across you. In fact, I was in total disagreement with you on a particular race, and I had to eat crow. I think I still owe you lunch from that, by the way. You won't let me pay off the bet. But I think I still owe you lunch from that prediction. I wanted to talk to you about midterms. We're here in the heart of Alabama. It's easy to get a lot of opinions from people who work on the right side of the aisle. But you spend your career working on the left side of the aisle with Democrats. What do you see coming a week from tomorrow night? Is it going to be more competitive than we're led to believe? The national polling has had it all over the place. It was an inevitable Republican run, and then all of a sudden we were hearing about a Democrat surge, and now the national media for the last week or so seems to be preparing people for the Democrats not to have a good night. So when midterms hit a week from tomorrow night, what's your point of view? What are you seeing from your perspective?
Yeah, Scott, listen, most midterms are about fundamentals. In this election, most of these fundamentals are Democrats are staring at the business end of most of these fundamentals. You have President Biden's popularity, which is actually better than it was 6 months ago, but yep. President Biden is still a little bit in the red. You know, his approval's, you know, in the low 40s, in the mid 40s. So you're still not where you would want to be if you're a Democrat. The national right direction, wrong direction is not great, is bad, and Democrats as the party in power are even if it's fair or not, or get blamed for that. And a lot of the economic metrics out there, people, you know, inflation is a big one, but other metrics that designate economic nervousness, economic anxiety, a lot of those are more pessimistic than optimistic. So you put all that together, and those fundamentals are troubling for the party in power. For Democrats, there are a couple of wrinkles here that I do think make it a little bit more complicated. And that one you mentioned earlier, the Democratic enthusiasm surge, which I think is real, was real this late summer, largely as a factor of the Dobbs Supreme Court decision.
Right.
You saw Democrats win a very competitive special election in upstate New York
that's
that a
right.
lot of people, Democrats included, thought Republicans were poised to win. Democrats, so it's not just looking at the polls, even in the real world. You look at Democrats winning some of these special elections, Democratic turnout, the pro-choice side won an abortion ballot measure in Kansas, a pretty conservative state. So if you really want to, you can talk yourself into it from a Democratic perspective that this, you know, could run against some of those fundamentals. But I don't think you're ever going to go broke betting on the fundamentals to carry the day in the midterms. You have to bet. I think that's the way you go, which would indicate a pretty good election night for Republicans. The one other caveat is that in a lot of these Senate races, especially, Republicans just nominated some not great candidates. I mean, Herschel
right.
Walker, very flawed candidate. Doesn't mean he can't win. Very flawed candidate. Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Doesn't mean he can't win. Very flawed candidate compared to what we in the business call sort of a generic Republican. If you had the Katie Britt version in Georgia running for Senate, if you had the Katie Britt version running in Pennsylvania or Arizona or some of these other places, I think Republicans would be pretty much a lock to take the Senate. But we actually have seen Republicans have nominated some Senate candidates that I think could be have so much baggage that it makes it difficult for them to leverage and weaponize these political fundamentals, that everything else equal should be benefiting the Republican Party.
Yeah, you're right. And in both of those states, the Republican nominee did not generate a great deal of enthusiasm across the state. And they're very much in the races, it appears. What is your prediction on Georgia and Arizona specifically, Zach? What do you think? How do you think those two states unfold?
My gut is that Georgia will have a Senate runoff, that I think that is sort of a coin flip race, as we all remember from the January 2021 runoff where you had both Senate races in Georgia that helped flip the U.S. Senate to Democratic control. My gut would be that we're looking at another runoff, that Warnock is at 49, Walker's at 48, or vice versa, and then we have another runoff. We get to do this all again. This year would actually be in December, not January, yeah. But we get to do all of this again in December. So I think that would be where I would bet the money on. And I actually do think that helps Democrats, that Warnock, I think, would have at least a finger on the scale to win a runoff, because a lot of what Warnock is dealing with is you have a popular Republican governor in Brian Kemp. You have the midterms dominated by these national issues that I mentioned earlier, inflation and whatnot, where mm-hmm. if it's really just a Warnock on Walker runoff in December, it's a bit more about those two candidates. And I don't think it's controversial, to say that Warnock, is a little bit more of a conventional candidate. Walker has a lot of baggage. And so I would bet a runoff there. I actually do think that Democrats probably hang on to Mark Kelly in Arizona. I think there's a competitive governor's race there. That probably tilts a little bit Republican. There's a woman named Carrie Lake, who your listeners may be familiar with, who could, if she wins that governor's race, could actually be the next big MAGA celebrity. MAGA. Yeah. She could be the new Ron DeSantis. My guess is that Ron DeSantis would just as soon Carrie Lake not win in Arizona, lest he have to compete for to be the next big MAGA Trump style.
She'll be a national player, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and she has a real celebrity factor, a former TV anchor who has a force of personality that I actually just don't get from DeSantis. DeSantis obviously has done a lot of things right. I don't know that DeSantis has that magnetic Trump style personality that we've all gotten used to. But I actually think Mark Kelly in Arizona is a pretty good fit for that state. Astronaut, of course, pretty middle of the road Democrat, at least sort of that's his mold. So my gut is that might be a state. And I think Georgia could be another one where they elect a Republican governor and a Democratic senator. We haven't seen a ton of ticket splitting in American politics over the last few cycles. I do think this could be those could be two states, I think, where Democrats elect where they go Democratic in the Senate and we have Republican governor. So that would be my gut on those two races.
Interesting. What about Nevada? Have you looked at that at all?
Yeah, the governor of Nevada is a client of mine. Steve Sisolak, who's the incumbent governor of Nevada. The Senate race there is, of course, the big ticket item. I do think you put your finger, Scott, on the right three races, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. I think the party that wins two of those three races is going to have the majority here. I've mentioned that I think Walker's a flawed candidate in Georgia. I think you can make that case about Pennsylvania, J.D. Vance in Ohio. I don't know that it's going to cost Republicans that Senate seat, but Republicans had to go spend $50 million to bail out J.D. Vance because he's not a very good candidate. Nevada is one where Republicans have had a little bit more of sort of a vanilla, conventional Republican candidate, which doesn't sound that exciting, but in a wave election year, and an election year where it feels like it's shaping up to be pretty good for Republicans, if you're a Republican, that's all you want is a nice vanilla replacement level, is the way they would describe it in a sports analytics, just sort of an average generic Republican. And that's what Republicans have in Nevada. So I think Nevada probably is the most likely place that Republicans can go flip a seat from blue to red. And Nevada could be one of these states that has been Democratic for several cycles now, that actually Republicans could have a really good night in Nevada and could flip. You know, you could see a Senate race, governor seat, multiple congressional seats. You could feel, I don't think it would be permanent like it was in Alabama, but you could almost have like a 2010 style Republican wave in Nevada where all of a sudden a pretty Democratic state looks a lot more red the day after the election.
Zach, I don't know how closely you're watching some of the local legislative, state legislative races in Alabama. We've talked about that a little earlier today. A couple of races down in Mobile, one in the Montgomery area where Charlotte Meadows is. There might be one in Lee County as well. I can't remember there's a couple in Huntsville, one in Montgomery, and then one in Mobile where Vivian Figures, her race. Are you watching any of these state legislative races? Do you have a thought on any of those?
You know, not in a ton of detail, Scott, to talk about individually. I do think my expectation is that the Republican legislature drew these districts to really minimize the chance of having very competitive districts. So I would be somewhat surprised if any of the Republican incumbents get beat, if any of the Democratic incumbents get beat, or if there's even an open seat. I would be pretty surprised if we see, you know, maybe there's one or two of these seats that just have a really strong candidate in one party or the other, or some local dynamics where the turf underneath them is shifting a little bit from red to blue or blue to red. But I would be pretty surprised if we see anything but a partisan alignment in the state Senate, in the state House that looks much different than it does now. My anticipation is that there are a lot of smart, savvy Machiavellian, not in a negative sense, but a pretty Machiavellian maps here that really were trying to minimize competitive seats and try to lock in Republican supermajorities. And that would be my expectation of what we're going to see happen in Alabama. I also think that turnout is a big question mark in Alabama because there's just nothing that is that feels competitive, at least at the statewide level, nothing that feels all that hot and heavy. Maybe if you're in one of these legislative districts that has a different feel to it. But, you know, I would be, that's the one thing that would worry me a little bit if I were in one of these competitive legislative races, of just knowing who is turning out in an election where it feels like almost everything was decided in the Republican primaries and runoffs.
Yeah, I think that is a factor. It's almost anticlimactic for the state of Alabama, anyway, next week when they go to the polls. I think the big race in Jefferson County, which is Alabama's largest county, is probably the sheriff's race. And I don't know how actually competitive it is. I just know there's a lot of interest in it. And I do think the redistricting has probably firmed up Republicans. Maybe the one exception is Charlotte Meadows district out of Montgomery or the Montgomery area. It almost looked like redistricting may have been a gift to the Democrats on that particular district. So she may be the only one that was basically drawn out of the legislature. I think in the other three that are viewed as competitive, it is just a matter of people moving in and out, and there has been a bit of a shift to the Democratic side in at least three, or at least two of those races in the Huntsville area. Or at least that's what my folks up there are telling me. Zach, I don't know in my lifetime if we have ever seen the two parties, the two major parties in this country, more polarized from each other. There used to always seem to be common ground. In fact, I was a believer for a long time that about 10% of the people on each side were on the fringe and about 80% were in the middle somewhere. I don't really think that's the case anymore. Is there an area that you could, as we close, and we've only got a minute, is there an area you see for compromise between Democrats and Republicans, one issue that they could start compromising on?
You know, I do think we've seen a little bit of that, you know, under Biden. There's been a somewhat bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed, a somewhat bipartisan gun safety bill that was passed. Some of the initial relief act, you know, had some Republican votes passed. So, but I think those are the exceptions, and you're right. I think a lot of this filters down from the top where things get very polarized, and instead of all politics being local, which is the old adage, I think all politics is now national and being driven by these national conversations. It forces people into their corners. The one place I would like to see, and it does feel like it should be right for compromise, is some of the just basic election administration laws to standardize some of these things. You know, Florida seems to do a good job under DeSantis, where we know who is won Florida on election night. And it's difficult because these are, you know, 50 states have power and authority over their elections. I would like to see, I think that would help lower the temperature on this discussion of, is democracy under attack? Are people's votes being denied? All of that. If we could have something that was a little bit more standardized across 50 states, and Pennsylvania counting votes different than Arizona, than Florida, than Michigan, if we could have some compromise, and it seems like that would benefit both sides, and not necessarily where one side would have to feel like they're giving into the other or they're taking a loss on it. So my hope would be that that could be something where people could come together in the short term to try to, you know, instill a little bit more consistency and faith and confidence in our election system.
Zach McCray joining us. Zach, thank you so much for taking the time, and I'm always grateful and appreciative of your insight. It's always on the spot, and I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, sir. Thanks so much, Scott. Great to talk with you.
We'll be back with more Right Side Radio right after this. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. This is Scott Buttram. I've been filling in for Phil Williams today. Phil is out taking care of a family event, and I have been happy to be here. I've enjoyed being here. I like spending time with this audience, with you folks. I like to talk conservative politics, and I know you like to listen to that, or you wouldn't be listening to us right now. Just to recap a little bit, Jeff Poore filled in for me on the first hour of the show, so I could come in and fill in for Phil during the rest of the show. We got everything covered. He interviewed Tom Butler in a very competitive legislative race up in North Alabama in the Huntsville area. We have had Wesley Britt on, the husband of U.S. Senate Republican nominee Katie Britt. Wesley kind of shared how he and Katie have teamed up as mom and dad and taking care of the home front while they've campaigned from one end of the state to the other, and what life will be like for them if Katie wins the midterm a week from tomorrow night and goes from being Katie Britt to Senator Katie Britt, and she'll be splitting time in Washington, D.C. But if you had a chance to listen to that interview, you probably feel the way I do, and that is, if any two folks can handle this and keep their priorities in the right place, Katie and Wesley Britt are those two people. So they've done a great job of maintaining their family life and prioritizing that ahead of all else, along with their faith. And so far, I suspect they'll continue to do that. We also had Paul DeMarco, Jefferson County Republican chair, joined us to talk a little bit about the local elections in Jefferson County and issues that he sees with the Democratic campaign platform. And we were joined by Sean Ross to talk about the midterms from the Republican standpoint, and Zach McCray joined us to talk about midterms from the Democrat standpoint. Great insight from both of those guys. I appreciated having both of them on, appreciated all of our guests today. Big thanks to Boomer, the producer over there, knocking things out left and right. Y'all have no idea what this guy has juggled this afternoon. He got thrown a rookie, and he handled it like he was an old pro.
Thank you. No worries. This has been fun.
You got me from one side of the state to the other, Boomer, without blinking. And it was great to have you in here taking care of everything. You guys, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for letting me come into your homes and cars. And Phil will be back to talk to you and give you the insight tomorrow.